Hello and welcome to the MediCall podcast. I'm Corey and John is here subbing in for Daryl. Hey, John.
Hey, Corey. How's it going?
Good. We are back. We took some time off. We had a lot of things come up in our lives these days, and of course the holidays in there. So, we had to take a couple of weeks off. So I appreciate all of your patiences, John. Help.
Sure. Sure. Let's go with patiences.
Patiences. That's... What is the plural of that? Is it just patience? All of your patience.
Yeah. Yeah. We have one collective That's amount of patience.
What? Yeah, patience with an S at the end. Just kidding.
Yep.
So we're here. This is 207, excuse me, or something like that. I just looked at it and I closed it and I already forgot the number, but it doesn't matter. And we're going to talk about a couple of different things today, including the Secret Lair Versary or Secret Versary or whatever the heck Watsy calls it. Also doesn't really matter what they call it. we're going to talk about Commander Legends Draft, and Commander Legends just the set in general. Just a brief little visit to that. I know it's kind of old news for many of us now, but now's a good time to start picking up some singles from that set. So I'd really like to concentrate on, what are the things that you're targeting? I know, John, you too are a Commander player. So it's a good time to start looking at the singles as the pricing on those is kind of reaching the bottom, if not already reached the bottom, with a lot of people opening their packs and reselling their cards and their booster boxes. And then we'll take one last stop on the podcast train at Historic, because that's some common ground we share that Daryl doesn't touch the arena scene. So I like to talk about Historic with you when we have the opportunity to do so, because it's one of the only ways I engage with competitive Magic these days. And I think it's a pretty unique format. So got some news there with the Kaladesh Remastered coming out.
Absolutely.
So first stop, choo-choo, our sponsor, ManaTraders.com. ManaTraders.com, your leading source of paper and digital card rental. Use the promo code CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, no spaces, no hyphens, for 14% off your subscription at checkout. Again, that is Card Knock Life Podcast, all one word. And we're moving on to the next stop, choo-choo, Secret Versary. So we're going to talk about pictures, as I said previously off the air here. So we won't spend too much time on this because, many of you have already seen the art, but I just want to give our feedback for, what that's worth. I don't know what the exchange rate is on our 2 cents, but probably not too high.
I think it gets you 23 gems in arena and probably 57 gold, if I had to guess.
Which of course is an odd number, and so it always rounds down in that case. So if that's true, we're gonna give it to you anyway. And this is a weird one, is it not? I mean, this bunch, there's a lot of different stuff going on here, and I'm pretty psyched about these, to be honest with you. If it weren't like the holiday season and I wasn't like spending a bunch of money on Christmas gifts, I would be tempted to buy each and every one of these for different reasons.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think we should say for anyone who doesn't know, this is specifically the 1 year anniversary celebration of Secret Lair. So they're kind of going all out with a pretty wide variety of stuff. I would say, probably the most varied group of things. Probably the number of drops, because they've had a couple of these where they have multiple drops at once or all within a short period of time. And I don't think we've really had as much variety as we do this time around. It seems like basically every one of them has stuff. Particularly if you're a Commander player. Every one of them has stuff that you'd be potentially interested in and a lot of neat ideas, except maybe the squirrels. I mean, I know people love squirrels, but...
Yeah, the squirrels I'm not terribly psyched about. I don't think there's a whole lot of value there. I can't believe they didn't include Deranged Hermit. How did they miss out on that one?
That is really strange. I think this is kind of like the Oh My God Kittens drop from the first set. Where I think this is going to be a really cool thing if you're an old school Magic player who grew up playing with squirrels, or if you're maybe a newer player who's come in and as you start digging in, you start seeing like the old fascination with squirrels in like Unglued and stuff like that. Yeah, so maybe not as appealing.
Then Deranged Hermit belongs, right? He's like the OG of Squirrels. Yeah. I mean, Croce and Beast, what the heck? I remember that card was the way that they previewed Threshold. That was the way they showed off Threshold when they used to have the old Mothership page. And then they'd do those little set. Remember those set preview pages that they'd have? And they'd have like maybe like four or five spoiler cards that they'd show off. And you'd like have... That was... It that was all the information you had on the whole set, and then it was like the packaging.
And your pre-release
was on there.
Card was in a different language too, yep. So you didn't necessarily know what it was.
Yeah. So Croce and Beast came out, and it was like, oh, sick Threshold. We can have an 8/8 for 4 mana, and that was like really powerful in the mind of like a 12-year-old that was like about to like play some kitchen table magic. But you know, things creep a little bit, and turns out a 4/4 or a 4-mana 8/8 would be like a common today.
Oh, yeah, I mean, a 4-mana 1/1, because I would not trust it to be a 4-mana 8/8.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I will say that the art is really varied. There's some nice throwbacks to some of that old Squirrel art, plus some kind of interesting kind of cartoony things. I think the Squirrel token itself is just, like, a really interesting kind of beautiful, surreal fantasy image of a squirrel. You don't necessarily... Yeah. See that kind of subject, but it's if you're a squirrel lover, you'll be into that.
Yeah, that one involves Squirrel Token, Swarm Yard, Squirrel Wrangler, Squirrel Mob, Croce and Beast, and Chatter of the Squirrel. And the cost of all of these, I do believe, is the same. Oh no, this one is $40. Wow,
this one I think is only foil. So this is one of the weird things about this. As usual, Wizards. Just doesn't know how to keep things simple. They have to make it more complicated than it needs to be. So not every one of the drops is available in both foil and non-foil. Most of them are. And then they have bundles that have different combinations of them. But if you get the non-foil bundle and you get the foil bundle, you're not getting the same packs because they're not quite evenly distributed, but I think the squirrel one is just foil for $40.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But then otherwise, it looks like they're all 30 for non-foil, 40 for foil.
Mm-hmm.
And they have different numbers of cards in them too, so that's worth noting.
Yeah, yep, for sure.
Okay, the next one is my favorite, and I'm working up from there, John, in case you're following along on the same page as me. Party Hard, Shred Later. This is the death metal album cover art of all the like best removal spells in the set, and then like Thrax and Mondar just because he's like metal as hell. So Anguish Unmaking, Assassin's Trophy, Decimate, Dreadbore, and Thrax and Mondar, and these are sick. They are full art. They are like the full like metal like tattoo text titles, and even like the card type is in that same text. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, this one, I would agree this one's probably my favorite as well. It's really weird because, and if you haven't seen these, again, we are talking about pictures. The art is really the whole thing here. But if you haven't seen these, definitely look up this one specifically, because this is by far the farthest away from actual Magic cards they've gone with these. This is even more out there than the Amonkhet Invocations. Which famously, I loved those. I have no problems, but I totally understand why a lot of people have trouble reading them and don't like them. These are pretty legible for being metal, but they don't have any real consistency with like where the card type is, where the mana cost is all over the place. But yeah, they brought in, as far as I'm aware, actual. Because I looked up a couple of these artists when they first announced it, but they have actual folks who make metal posters and stuff like that. So if you're big into certain types of metal, you may recognize some of these artists. But yeah, the thing I told you before we started is I can't wait to crack open a bottle of Anguished Unmaking. They look like craft brewery bottles.
Yep.
But they look sick. This is probably my favorite of any of the secret layers they've done, and I am absolutely getting this one.
Yeah, you make a good point with them being legible, because even though like some would look at them and be like, they're not really that legible, like considering the fact that they're like metal text, like That genre is all about like this notoriously like hard to read text. This is like super stylized and like all this like angular text. So like The Anguish Unmaking is like a perfect example, because that could be pushed like two or three more steps and it would just be like impossible to read. But it's just like perfectly like teetering on the edge of like, yeah, it's still
it's
metal.
Got that style.
Yeah, it's got that style.
It's got that
but
style.
But you can definitely
without,
understand
without
what it says.
Way.
So yeah, well executed.
I think Thraxamundar is the hardest to read.
Yeah, that one's
I'm
sweet.
Not like super familiar with that that card before. So when I first saw it, it took me a couple times to figure out which creature it was.
Yeah, it's cool that they included a legendary creature in here, because I know it's weird that like the theme is like removal and then there's like Thraxamundar, but I definitely want like a legendary creature to like build a commander deck with one of these. It's just a bummer that like only one of the removal spells goes into that legendary creature into that commander deck. But yeah, you know, just based on the color identity. But other than that, you know, these are all like playable cards. I love Decimate and Commander. That card's sick.
Yeah. Well, an Assassin's Trophy, like yeah. Not even just like that. A lot of these, I think one of the potential problems with some of the drops they have are, you know, they can be really, really focused into a point where it's like, well, if you don't play a certain format, you're never going to use those cards. This one seems pretty well balance. There's kind of stuff that sees play across different formats.
Yeah, as far as getting your money's worth, I don't think the squirrel one really pans out. There's nothing in there that's really that valuable. I mean, there's like maybe some meme value to this, and you're paying for the collectability of it. But this one, like Assassin's Trophy, is worth something. Anguish Unmaking is worth something. I think that's like a $5 or $6, maybe even $7 card for commander purposes. And then everything else is a couple bucks. So I could see this one like holding value or gaining value over time, just because it's so unique. And these are all like super playable cards.
Yeah. And I think the kind of the last thing I want to say about this specific drop is, to me, this is the perfect kind of thing for Secret Lairs to be.
Yeah,
I know Secret Lair in general, just to be clear, Secret Lair drops are these alternate art things. Wizard said from the very, very first announcement that Secret Lair as a brand covers basically any kind of weird experimental stuff they want to do. But for the drops specifically, this is the perfect thing for me, in my opinion. This is the polar opposite of the Walking Dead. Right. The Walking Dead, people didn't like them for a bunch of different reasons. But the biggest ones are really, I can only get these cards from you if I buy them right now. They don't look like Magic cards in a way I don't like, i.e. they have what look like pictures of people, of real people on them, you know, of a show that has questionable relevance moving forward. This is kind of the opposite of all of that. It doesn't look like a Magic card, but it doesn't look like a Magic card because they're going for something really cool and unique. And that's really the intent behind it. And they're cards that if you need to pick these cards up, you're going to have no problem ever finding them. If you want this specific version, it's there for you.
Yep. Yep. All right. And let's move. Let's speed up here a little bit. I think we're maybe.
Yeah, actually,
too
sorry.
We're passionate
about
this.
I'm going to say one other thing about squirrels. Sorry to go back to squirrels. That one may not be the most valuable now, but I would watch it in the long run, because from the original set of drops, I think this is, again, like the kittens one. I think it might not sell very well. So if you are somebody who just cares about collecting, this might be, you know, something you're already thinking about picking up. I don't think it's going to just, it probably will keep picking up value, but yes, let's move on to what I think is actually maybe my second favorite.
All right, Happy Little Gatherings. They got Bob freaking Ross to paint 10 basic
Back
land arts.
They selected snippets of Bob Ross paintings that they could say look like a swamp.
Yeah. So, back from the dead. There are 10 lands in here. That's sweet, first of all, and it finally feels like you're getting like a near like playable amount of like basic lands in a collection, whereas like you don't have to buy like 10 damn copies of the Secret Lair to, you know, to like actually have enough to like use. You know, considering that like a modern mana base like maybe could have just 2 basic lands in it, like you could buy 2 of these and pretty much be set. But here's my problem with this. Like, this is really cool, and it's they look amazing. They are like uniquely Bob Ross, but I don't know how often we can go back to this well of like basic land arts. Like, we have printed so many foil basic lands at this point that I have so many to choose from already that I'm just personally not terribly interested in like dropping another 40 to like $80 on like another set of foil options. You know what I mean? Like, I have so many choices.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of how often we can go back and dip into that well, they do it for literally every product that's released. So everything needs basic lands. If they want to keep coming up with cool new things to sell in that regard, I'm totally cool with it. But and even though I am interested in buying this one, I probably will pick up a set. I'm kind of the same. You know, I have my preferred sets of lands for different uses. I have the ones that I tend to like to use in Commander. Maybe I'll pick a different one depending on who my commander is, but I kind of go back to the same couple arts that I know I like. And then for draft, I have like an alpha beta set, and I have you know, one other set of like unhinged lands that I have sleeved up and ready to go. But beyond those, yeah, I don't really need too many more special basic lands. But that said, these ones do look really great. Obviously Bob Ross is well-loved entertainer and artist, and I think they feel really old school in a cool way. I actually kind of wish they had printed them in the old border art. But they look a lot like the Mirage basics. A lot of them, if you compare them to Mirage basic lands, they look very similar.
Yes, they do.
And that's just, you know, coincidental. These were not painted for the card specifically. Obviously they were selected, but I think it's great. And the other thing I want to say about these before we move on, you can actually get half of these lands on Arena for free. It's a limited time. But they put out codes for half of them. You can look them up on, actually I've got them right here. I'll just read them off very quickly. You can also find these on the subreddit, I'm sure, but enter these into the store on Arena. Delightful Meadow, Island Wilderness, Happy Swamp, Move Mountains, Tree Friend. So enter those five codes. Again, you can find them on the subreddit, any of the Magic subreddits, I'm sure. And I think that is, compared to what Wizards does with a lot of their other products, a super generous. I mean, obviously it's advertising the secret layers, but they look great, and it's what I'm using in Arena now, and you don't have to pay anything to get half of them.
Yeah. I would second the, like, if they could put these in old frame, they would be awesome, and I would be all over it. They are in the modern frame, and that's kind of part of the issue, is like, you really have to pay close attention to notice that they are like these unique promos, because there's no like other identifying factor other than the art, obviously, which is like, you know, it's cool, right? I'm not gonna like deny that. Bob Ross, great artist, right? Awesome, like, figure entertainment icon, right? But he's not like, I don't know if his career and his reputation is like actually built on his like artistic prowess as much as it is on like him being a TV personality. And so like, I think that these are more like to sell based on the culture surrounding the artist. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know enough about Bob Ross, but he's like a PBS show host type, right? So like,
yeah, and he's gotten some renewed, he's definitely a well-beloved kind of nostalgic figure, and he's had a big resurgence over the last several years, in part due to things like Twitch partnering with his estate, or maybe they bought the rights to air his show on Twitch and stuff like that. Okay. So he's gotten a lot of additional popularity. And I mean, if we want to be cynical, Wizards is cashing in on that, but it is also a cool thing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why I like the Arena ones, the Arena Bob Ross basics, because there it really is just the art. Once you play it on the battlefield, you just have that square.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it feels a little like low effort to me on their part. The art is cool. It's great. I'll leave it at that. Moving on. Anyways, the last one, speaking of artists, Seb McKinnon, on the other hand, is like
alive.
I'm not going to compare him to Bob Ross. Totally different. Totally different genres. Tomato, tomato. He is alive. He has specifically painted these arts for these cards. In fact, they gave Seb the opportunity to select the cards that he was to include in this pack. I'm sure he had some limitations on what he could include, i.e. like the reserve list, and like what, you know, there's probably a very specific list of what could be included. Damnation is a big include in this four pack here, but he has chosen Damnation, Enchanted Evening, Sour of Temptation, and Swamp, a very like seemingly random bunch of cards, but potentially picked for like some, you know, special place in Seb's heart.
Oh yeah,
maybe for like something related to the artistic opportunities that are presented by those cards.
It's actually a story. So when they announced this, yeah, and this isn't necessarily my favorite of the drops, but this is the most exciting for me in terms of where they go in the future, because they have indicated this is the start of the artist series. If you want to know the full story, I'm not going to try to recount it poorly to you, but check out Seb McKinnon's Twitter. That's how they actually announced this, is through his Twitter, with him basically putting out this big thread with the entire story of how Wizards came to him, what the art direction process was like, and how he picked them. And it seems like they gave him pretty close to complete free reign to pick which cards he wanted to include. So he took a handful of cards and created a story. So there's a whole story behind what's going on in these cards. His brother wrote the flavor text. It's like a poem he wrote to go with the story. And they even let Seb McKinnon, apparently he was involved and directed as much of this, to the point where he was involved in the making of the promotional video as well. So he helped direct the promotional video. He helped determine like what the theme of the video was going to be, and even provided music and stuff. So it's like, it's not just, you know, do art. It's like, really, here, artist, you get to art direct and create this drop from scratch. I'm sure they do have those rules, you know, no, they're not going to print Lotus in one of these or whatever, you know, or anything like that. I don't know what the limitations were, but yeah, it seems like they're giving them a lot of freedom, and I really want to see, you know, what happens if you give that kind of freedom to John Avon?
Yeah.
What does John Avon want to do? Yeah. You know, any of the you know, 100 plus well-loved Magic artists at this point, it seems like every couple of years we got a new, you know, one person who goes on a big tear and becomes a instant favorite. But yeah, Seb McKinnon, awesome stuff. The art's really, really interesting. Very Seb McKinnon.
Yeah.
And apparently like a lot of Secret Lairs, there is a secret additional card in this one, and it is it's basically the first draft of the Swamp. So you get like an early mock-up of his Swamp art before
it. And it's all specific to this one, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I was wondering about that. I noticed in the latest bunch that they had been putting out, it's still the Stained Glass Planeswalkers. Is that coming in the remainder of these packs then?
I don't know.
Those are feeling a little stale now.
I think the ones that people reported getting Stained Glass Walkers in now are ones that came out a while ago and took a long time to deliver.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think this one I heard has the additional Swamp. I know the Walking Dead one had another unique equipment card that they never announced and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, I guess we'll see when these are delivered.
I got the Bolt one, the Lightning Bolt one, which was actually, it was at the beginning of the summer, but it just it arrived in fall. But yeah, that one had a Planeswalker in it. So anyways, it'd be nice to see something different. So all right, anyways, let's go on. It's time to move on. We talked about that quite a bit, but obviously we're passionate about it, and I think it's a really cool thing that they're doing.
There's one more.
Yeah, one more. Did we skip
one?
One more
Secret Lair. This is another one.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah, go on. You want to do this one?
Yeah, I'll do this one. So this one's pretty straightforward. This is like, to me, in hindsight, the most obvious pack for them to do. And that's a box of rocks. It's mana rocks that people need for Commander. We've got, let's see what all's on here. Commander Sphere, Gilded Lotus, Arcane Signet, Chromatic Lantern, Dark Steel Ingot. And this one's kind of a... The theme is just kind of a pop art style. There's a handful of different artists making kind of different out there, really colorful arts. And the, I guess the goal with the art of this one was to show the rocks actually being used. So most pictures of mana rocks are just the item itself. So like the commander sphere for the frog, in this one, the commander sphere is a picture of a frog that picked up the sphere from the bottom of a lake or something like that, and now has the magical power of the chromatic sphere and stuff like that.
Nice. Yeah, these arts are very strange, super colorful to like represent the five colors of mana that each of them can produce. All of them very useful, with the slight exception of Darksteel Ingot. Darksteel Ingot feels like the guy that's like late to the party and like busts open the door like, I'm here, behold. And then there's like no one there to celebrate his arrival because there's like this Skyclave relic now and everyone thinks that that guy's cool.
Yeah, Darksteel Ingot doesn't even have a kicker. Why would you... You can't get three of them out of one.
It's a bummer that they didn't just like make a quick pivot into that being Skyclave relic, but... But I, you know, I might just play this one because it's a promo, although the art on it kind of strange. I'm not sure I can get behind it. It's a little weird.
I love it. It's if you look at that art and look at the blown up version that they have in the secret lair page, it's actually I'm pretty sure it's actually CG.
Is it? Oh boy. Okay. Yeah.
Which is like a thing that I remember as a kid, Pokemon would do that. And I always thought that was so weird how random Pokemon cards would be a CG model and then another one would be like a colored pencil drawing.
Yep.
But I like it. I mean, realistically, are a lot of people going to play this? No. But I think it's like that one has like a very like a Adult Swim Cartoon Network.
Yes, it does. Kind of vibe to it. The three that I'm most interested in, I dig the art 100%. Arcane Signet, Chromatic Lantern, Gilded Lotus. I think those are the ones that people are most excited for, probably. Commander Sphere sees play in Commander, but less so now because there's just so many other choices. But that one is cool, too. It has a little bit of a, like, I don't know if Lisa Frank is the right word, but, like, Hot Topic feel to it, maybe.
Yeah, totally.
It's like a notebook that you would, like, take to high school or something, you know. Like, so anyways, we'll go on now. That I almost skipped that one. We had to talk about that one, but there's a lot to love here. Secret Lairversary, Secret Versary, whatever the heck you call it. I support this. And I'm thankful that the prices are $30 for the non-foils. That's keeping it on Earth here. Okay, let's talk Commander Legends. If you could just give a brief synopsis of your experiences with the draft, the draft version of Commander Legends. I know that some people have had the opportunity to draft online, although, you know, COVID's put a little bit of a damper on the release of the pre-release opportunities.
Yeah. Well, so I'll say this. I haven't played any draft myself. I've opened some boosties that I was going to potentially draft, but I decided, you know what, birthday during quarantine, let's have some fun, crack some packs, even though I'm normally a save them all up and draft them for the love of God kind of person. So anyway, I've cracked some and gotten to enjoy them that way. But then I've watched, I think at this point I've watched three drafts online. The biggest one that I watched, this is probably the easiest to find if you're interested in seeing a game yourself. The MTG Goldfish crew did a full draft.
Yeah.
And, I have to say I was very excited to draft this format as somebody who mostly plays limited and used to play a ton of Commander when we could do that in person. I was really excited about that, but after watching some drafts, I don't know if I ever really want to draft this format.
Oh, no.
It just kind of seems like I'll put it this way. I would draft it with house rules to fix some of the things that I see as potential problems. And again, this is from somebody who's watched a few drafts. I haven't actually gotten to do it myself.
Yeah.
But the big problem seems to be that the draft takes forever, because people are building Commander decks, and then once you actually get through that, the games are just going to take forever because you're playing Commander decks full of draft chaff, essentially. So that really seems to be kind of a problem. I've heard people say, you know, if you can lower the starting life total, it'd be a better a better experience, because you just, it just takes too long to kind of close out the game on any one player with that much life.
Yeah.
But that said, I think there's a ton of cool cards. There's a ton of interesting stuff to play around with. I think overall the set does look pretty cool, even if the draft experience isn't necessarily all that appealing to me anymore. If you're not familiar with the draft, the basic gist is the packs are a little bit bigger. There are 20 cards. Instead of taking one pick in passing, you take two, so that you can get a pair of commanders potentially. And you know, pass, and then you build your deck that way. There's a couple other caveats. I think it's 60 cards instead of 100. And because it's limited, there's no singleton rule.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you still follow color identity and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think I'd be willing to give the draft a shot with some friends, you know, do a big old multiplayer game and just make it happen.
I think I'd
suffer through it with the right crowd.
Yeah, I guess I'm not itching to do it, but I definitely would do it if the opportunity presented itself with friends.
Yeah.
What I absolutely would not do, and I did consider doing this before I saw the MTG Goldfish game, I was considering playing on MTGO, but that just looks like an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you know, you're potting up with randos. You can't actually even play your decks, as far as I understand. You can't even play your decks against other people, because you can't do 60 card non-singleton commander outside of the draft. So just, I don't know. It seems like a product that they spent a ton of time working on, and it came out during the worst possible time for this product.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a real drag. I feel for them, you know, to be honest. I feel like WotC has really done a good job to like withstand this pandemic. They've, you know, done a great job of like providing ulterior means of, you know, selling product. And
oh yeah, they're making more money than ever.
People are still willing to buy paper cards, which is like, it speaks to the, you know, their support. When, you know, there's not the opportunity to play in person, like there's this Commander product that came out, and I still think that they just made bank on it. But it's a real drag that this whole experience of this format that probably was like pretty well conceived, like obviously they have good intentions for it, just like kind of shit the bed because the only way to do it was on MTGO, and then we're just reminded of how bad that experience is. It's not made for Commander, you know, and we're just kind of left with that opportunity as the only means to play it, and it sucks for everybody. It sucks for WotC. It sucks for us. So we just kind of have to hope that, you know, maybe they'll continue to print this product through the end of the pandemic, or, you know, reprint it at some point so that we can have in-person events. Maybe they'll, you know, reboot a pre-release for it. And obviously it's not a pre-release, but some kind of store event where they can give out some kind of promo to incentivize people showing up and like drafting. I don't know what there is, but it'd be nice to like give this a second shot, just not let it like, you know, go like that, because I think that this deserves an opportunity to be played in person,
yeah,
with a crowd in a store, and I don't think it's going to really get that opportunity if we just kind of like let it go and we just forget about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. They will definitely reprint this, just like they promised to reprint Jumpstart. that's the biggest problem with these kind of, well, I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating saying the biggest problem. That is a big problem with these products, is they release so many goddamn products that they just don't have time to keep doing. It's like, even if they say they're going to reprint these things, and you know, sometimes I'm sure they do or will, it's just like, who's got the time to do this when you have a new set coming out every 3 weeks or whatever?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I don't see where it's going to fit in. So I would say if you want to play this, buy a box now at reasonable prices and just sit on it till you can get together with your friends.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
But I think we can talk about some of the cards in here. I think there are some really cool reprints, some really cool new things we could talk about.
Yes, at the very least, I have been spending a lot of my energy related to Commander building decks and acquiring cards. I think part of the game that I love the most is... or I love a lot, is the collectible aspect of it, and just kind of like pimping out, you know, if I can snipe like a good price on a single every once in a while, that's kind of like the way that I can interact with the game when I'm not like actually sitting down at the table and playing. And this set provides a lot of opportunities to do that, because not only does it include a lot of new cards that are really, you know, exciting to build around, it also includes a lot of older cards that now have these like really cool extended arts and foils and etched foils and things like that. So let's talk just a quick rundown of like some of the targets that we have in mind for some of the single pickups. I know, John, you didn't include these on your list, but I'd like to start. I got just a short list of extended arts that I'm like, I'd like to upgrade some of those guys. It's only a subtle difference, but there are quite a few of these that are just played so frequently in my decks, and I'm like, might as well. Burnished Heart, for example, 99 cents for an extended art. I think I should probably pick up some of those. I mean, those show up in just about all my decks that aren't green. Abrade is another one. I mean, that card sees play in like every format that it's legal in, including Commander. I'm playing in Commander all the time. It's like,
and that's one that we've got a few different we've got a few different arts for Abrade now, right?
Yes, and there is a promo for Abrade, so that's the tricky part. If you don't have the promo, you might be interested in the extended art. I do have some promos, but I think I might need to round out my collection with some of these too.
Yeah, the promo is pretty cool. That was the the Amonkhet pseudo extended art thing where they kind of did the behind the text box.
Kodama's Reach is another one. Kodama's Reach is a $1.42, so that one sees a lot of play, so it's still quite pricey, but for the extended art you can get Kodama's Reach with the, I don't know where this art comes from. Is this from one of the, this is from Eternal Masters, I think. It's like the big leafy green arm sticking up over the trees.
Ultimate Masters, I think. It was either Ultimate Masters or it might have been in a Commander deck first.
Okay.
But it's one of those. It's it's not as good as the just the wooden vine hand reaching out or whatever.
Yeah.
But
the original is my favorite, of course. Boros Charm is another one on my list of targets here. Boros Charm, about $1.50 or so for the extended art at this point. Boros Charm is like an auto include in red white decks purely for the permanents you control gain indestructible until end of turn. For the same reason Heroic Intervention is good. Findhorn Elves is like kind of an oddball, but it's like now like super pimp because you can get this full art one, but it's also a card that was pretty hard to like locate. Findhorn Elves did not have a lot of accessible printings, and it was a couple bucks to get a copy of like an old beat up one. So now you can get an extended art one for about $1.80 or something, just under $2.
I pulled that one actually.
Good deal.
It looks very good. Findhorn Elves has a classic From the Vault printing as well. It's the same art from the Vault 20 or something like that.
Nice. And then Generous Gift. You can get the full art Generous Gift, which you see lots of play for Beasts Within. Generous Gift is just lagging behind that because it has access to a lot of other options in white. But about $1.50 or so, $2. And then last on my list here is Swords to Plowshares. Oh no, I'm sorry, I got two more. Swords to Plowshares has the like promo art. You can get the extended promo art, which is just like
beautiful,
badass as hell. It like,
looks so good in that frame too.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but this specific printing just looks really nice.
This one pricier though, you're looking at like $4.50 for it, but it is like it is an all-star. It's basically like a rare value. And then the last one, I lied, is Arcane Signet, and that one needed a reprint very, very badly. So that's welcome in general, but now it's like, now you can get the full art, and that belongs in every deck, except for brown
ones. Absolutely.
Because it doesn't produce any mana in brown decks.
Yeah.
Don't make that mistake. I did that once. Remember that, John?
That is pretty funny. Yes, I do. I remember that very well. I'm pretty sure you can find that video on YouTube.
Yeah.
I think I have a couple reprints that I was interested in, not as many as I don't have as many on your list, but then I've got a list of new cards I'd like to touch on.
Okay.
The main ones that I wanted to bring up for reprints are Mana Drain.
Big spender.
Not too long ago that card was like well over $100, right?
Yeah.
Now it's down to 50. I'm sure it'll creep back up again.
Yeah.
But if you happen to be somebody who needs one of these, if you don't have one for your deck, now is probably the time to get it, or wait until they reprint it two more times or something.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Scroll Rack. I think this is a card that a lot of decks wanted, but people did not play because for years and years this card was expensive. mm-hmm. and just really low supply. Because this was Scroll Rack was originally in which set? It was one of the Urzas,
Tempest,
right?
I think. No. Oh, it was earlier than that. I think it was Tempest. Yeah, Tempest.
Yeah. So for a long time, that was like the only way you could get that card. Yeah. And it's only been in the last few years that we've gotten any kind of reprint. So anyway, that's a deck or a card that I think a lot of decks can make interesting use out of that is now only about $30. And I don't see, unless they keep reprinting that card, I don't see it really continuing to go.
No, you're not wrong about that. And it was in Commander's Arsenal, to be fair, but and a masterpiece, yeah. but that doesn't really count as a reprint.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've had a couple reprints of that now, and it's looking pretty good.
I'll add Three Visits to that list. That's another one that probably belonged in my first list, but I thought, you know, it was kind of in a category of its own. I mean, that was like nearly like $100 card or something like that, and it's mm-hmm. now an uncommon, which is like $5. I mean, not even, it's like $2 for the regular printing, but you get the full art version of it for about $6.
Yeah, three Visits was actually, it's been upshifted from common. The original version is still like $130-$140, but that was for anybody who's not familiar with the card, yeah, Portal Three Kingdoms. So very, very limited release outside of the US in English, and then primarily printed in Asian languages.
Yeah.
It's one of those cards that I think because only Commander players need it. And there's really no other use for it. I don't, not that I'm aware of, at least. I think Wizards just took forever to reprint it. But it's got a cool new art with three different fairies. I forget exactly which ones, but I think they're all from existing cards.
Mm.
Something like that. But
yeah, I don't know. Oh, Pestermite is one of them. And are those the Vendilion Click fairies? Actually,
mm-hmm.
that's what
I think
those
so.
Are.
Or maybe they're just like the three different types of fairies. But anyway, if you're a long-time Magic player, you'll probably recognize the different styles.
No, I think those are the fairies from Vendilion Click. Am I wrong about that? They look like it because there are three of them. So the three visits, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Ah, interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool reprint.
Yeah, so then I don't really have too many of the like new cards. I mean, I have to spend some more time with that list. And I think that in terms of more new card targets, I think that we'll save that for a future episode because we're kind of running low on time. But one really quick one I wanted to throw in on that front is War Room. I think that one's kind of going overlooked. War Room is like only $1.50 or something right now. It's this card, like if you're not familiar with it, it's because it's overlooked, like I just said. I don't know. I'm sure there's people that are like, no, it's not overlooked. I'm totally aware. I've got that in all my decks already. So good, kudos to you. But it's a rare. It's tap for a colorless mana or pay 3 and tap it. Pay life equal to the number of colors in your commander's color identity and draw a card. This to me seems like an auto include in many, many commander decks. Paying life can be scary to some people when your commander costs like 2 different colored mana. Paying 3 mana, 2 life, and tapping a card to draw a card is like very much worthwhile. So, especially if you're not in blue, but even if you're
especially if you're not in black, actually.
Especially if you're not in black.
This is essentially what's the black castle? Lochthwain?
Yes, Lochthwain.
It's basically a colorless castle Lochthwain.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I think that's probably the most comparable.
Without the conditional enters the battlefield, I think it's harder to play Castle Lochthwain untapped in Commander than it is in Standard or Historic. So,
I guess it kind of depends on the deck. But the cool thing with War Room is like if you're playing a 1 or 2 color deck, like this is going to be just easier to use than the castle would have been. You're going to pay the same amount of mana. Doesn't matter what combination of colors. Play like a colorless deck. Then it's just like way, way better Archivereska.
Yeah.
I think this card's pretty solid. Mm-hmm. I think I'd agree with you that this is one that, I mean, the fact that it taps for colorless mana is going to obviously limit it because depending on your deck, you probably don't want too many lands that only tap for colorless mana.
Yeah.
But as a utility land that can draw you a card for very cheap in a lot of decks that otherwise have a lot of difficulty doing that.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah. All right, well, I think it's time we take the train on to our last topic, and we just spend a few minutes in that last topic because we are long-winded.
well, Corey, I've known you a long time. We have a lot of things to say to each other.
We do, and we love this game. So the last topic, choo-choo, is the historic metagame, and this is historic metagame post Kaladesh Remastered, and we have to talk about what this thing is looking like. It's been a long time since we talked historic on this podcast, and both John and I play historic to, you know, like, I think we play a moderate amount. I think that's my primary means of interacting with Arena. I get my dailies done. I maintain my ranking, complete my battle pass. How about you?
Yeah. So I play, I do kind of similar. I do just kind of a lot of ranked ladder. Been playing around with some of the new cards after doing a bunch of draft and whatnot, and I think Kaladesh, there's a lot of powerful stuff. There's a lot of folks who are concerned about some of the powerful stuff, but I think Wizards was pretty smart about which cards they included and didn't include for the most part.
Yes.
And the result is, you know, we've got 300 or whatever new cards to play around with in historic. It's this format that just grows maybe faster than any other format right now with how frequently they're adding cards into it.
Yeah.
I will say they did have some restraint and did not include a bunch of non-Kaladesh cards in this set like they did with Amonkhet Remastered, which is nice. We just got one Sculpting Steel.
Is that right?
But mm-hmm. Yep, no, it was only one Sculpting Steel, and it was just Box Topper, so you had to pre-order to get the singles. Otherwise, you can go use wild cards like anything else.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
That's the only Kaladesh card that was included. But yeah, there's a lot of cards in here that are adding new decks to historic, and there's some cool stuff happening.
Yeah, Kaladesh in standard did a lot of very broken things. So I think a lot of us were a little bit skeptical of what this could do to historic. We're finding out that in a much larger environment, a much larger card pool, like the power level of something like energy strategies is diminished. You know, we have much more access to like faster aggression. We have much more access to like, you know, we have Thoughtseize for one. And so there's a lot of stuff that can be done that is actually just better than like the energy strategies. Those things are still seeing some play. Like, there are definitely Aetherworks Marvel decks, but they're definitely not the best deck. So, the biggest gains that I'm seeing from this, and the cards from Kaladesh Remastered that I'm seeing the most of, seem to be like Chandra in the Goblins decks, which it just
Chandra
seems like
in Goblins and Sacrifice too. And John Sacrifice uses it.
Seems like a really obvious home for it in Goblins. And Goblins was already like kind of a problematic deck in this format. We both have strong opinions on Muxus, John and I. But now it's like we have this card that, you know, we're already running, Goblins was already running the 4-mana Ironcrag feat where it could just like ramp, you know, it could just like launch into Muxus on turn 4. Now we can go.
Some builds use it, not all, but some builds do.
Some of them had both. Now we can go Chandra in place of it, and then go turn 4 to turn 5 Muxus. You know, so it's like it already kind of fits the form because it increases your, you know, it like ramps you effectively. But it's also like this card that's like a sideboard card that's included in your main deck. So when Goblins has like these draws where you're just like digging for Muxus, they have this plan B that's like Chandra is just a really powerful freaking card. So if your opponent is just like going ham on the creature removal, well, I hope you have something to deal with this Chandra, because this thing will kill your ass if you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Chandra Torture Defiance. Definitely been seeing that around. It's interesting with Goblins because I think a lot of people run Goblins and try to just go all in on the combo Muxus out as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But I do think that Chandra, like one of the problems with Muxus Goblin decks is just like any other kind of creature deck, besides the fact that you have the 6-mana card that just can completely rebuild your board and win on the spot by itself if you're lucky. Besides that, you can get, you know, Wrath of Godded into Oblivion and just be out of the game. So I think that's kind of one of the things that Chandra helps shore up for those decks is like the longer game. Okay, you killed my creatures, now deal with this planeswalker at the same time. And oh yeah, I may just drop a Muxus and kill you on the spot later at any point. Yep. At one point anyway. And but that does bring up one card that I want to talk about specifically that I think people are starting to realize how good it is going to be in Historic, and that's Authority of the Consoles.
Oh.
This is a card that I don't think did really much in Standard. It's just a white mana enchantment, one mana. Creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, you gain one life. So for Muxus decks, that buys you a turn when they drop Muxus, they can't just swing in and kill you on the spot. Or if they drop a hasty Krenko somehow or something like that, they can't make all the tokens right away.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they even just get, Conspicuous Snoop out and just power out a ton of stuff with that and their Skirk Prospector, Authority can buy you a lot of time, and it's one of those sideboard cards you can drop on turn one, and it hoses a number of decks pretty efficiently.
Yeah.
Like some of the, I think some matchups against Jund Sacrifice it can do all right because it completely undoes, but it mostly undoes Cauldron Familiar. Because you're gaining life every time they bring it back in. They can't, like, if you're an aggro strategy, they can't block against it.
Right.
And it also buys you potentially a lot of time against one of the most explosive decks in the format right now, which is the combo. What's the combo? Neoform combo.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because it can't kill you on that the turn they go off.
Sure. Yeah. So no doubt. I haven't seen that played. But there really isn't a ton of white, with the exception of the enchantment stack, which is the most likely, home for that.
Enchantments, I don't know if the enchantments decks play like the Auras, Azorius, or Mono White. I don't know if they play that necessarily in sideboard. I haven't checked because they're kind of just like, hey, we're attacking with one, like 17, 18 flyer anyway.
Yeah.
So they don't care as much about stuff on the ground, but I think the Yorion decks and stuff like that can use it. But
okay.
But I'm there's a lot of some, like, kind of interesting sideboard stuff like that in this set.
Yeah. Speaking of enchantments, that was another big winner from the Kaladesh release, because SRAM now provides more opportunity to gain card advantage from your enchantments. They already had access to Core Spirit Dancer, which seemed like a card. The card honestly seemed like kind of out of place for this format. It seemed like it was on a whole different power level. It felt like you were playing a modern deck whenever you played Core Spirit Dancer, and everyone else was doing like, trying to do like green black rock things with like the standard legal cards. But now we have SRAM too, so it's like, okay, you better have something to deal with this stuff.
Yeah, those decks basically get to play seven things that turn all of their other spells into cantrips.
Yep.
And I really hate playing against auras or any kind of like boggles kind of, I mean, this isn't exactly boggles, but you're kind of boggles. You just have separate one mana creatures to protect your Voltron instead of giving it itself Shroud or Hexproof or whatever that version has, but you get these, like, when you get two Core Spirit Dancers down or a Core Spirit Dancer and SRAM down, and you're casting your like one mana Sentinel's Eyes from your graveyard and drawing two cards off of it.
Yeah,
that deck snowballs really, really quickly.
Yep. And how about this segue? Thank God for Fatal Push from Kaladesh Remastered, because Fatal Push is like the perfect removal spell for these. Usually it just eats an Alseed of Life's Bounty or a Selfless Savior, because they always have like some turn one protection for their two mana creature. But you just need that many removal spells to get through all of that crap to eventually kill their dudes. But Fatal Push is seeing quite a bit of play too. Not as much as I would have thought. I thought it would make a bigger impact on the format, but we really have some good options for one mana black removal spells. And I'm thinking from the perspective of a pilot of the Rakdos Arcanist decks, who, already are playing Bloodchief's Thirst, which is very strong, and Spark Harvest. So it's like, okay, now we have an option for another really strong one mana removal spell.
Yeah, I think the real problem with Push in this format is every deck isn't running fetches. You know, it's just a lot harder to enable it. Like, yes, a lot of decks do run Fabled Passage, but you're generally trying not to crack that until you have four lands so you can get all of your mana out of it. Mm-hmm. And if you compare that to Bloodthirst Chief, or Blood Chief's Thirst, I think that's what it is.
Yep,
Blood Chief's Thirst. That one, you lose instant speed on it, but you can kill Planeswalkers. And you can kill Planeswalkers at the same time you could consistently pop a Fabled Passage, you know, turn four. So yeah. I think that's the big knock against it. But if you're playing, you know, obviously like a control sort of thing, or you know, you're playing Arcanist and you want to, you know, cast it at instant speed or whatever, that kind of stuff is pretty important there. But it is interesting that we have multiple things competing in that, it basically in that exact same slot when Fatal Push was a pretty dang big deal when that card was released.
Yep.
Feels like forever ago, but it's only been a handful of years here.
I know, it seems like it's been in the format
2 years or something, 3 years maybe.
Forever. I just went away from Fatal Push, so I can't look at one for the date, but yeah, probably about three, four years. And then lastly, just round out the newcomers here, and this is just kind of an evolution of a deck that already existed, and I know, John, you were playing this prior to Kaladesh's release, and that is the Mono Brown Ramp deck is now like a Metalwork Colossus Paradox Engine deck.
Oh, yeah, it's a straight-up combo deck now.
Monument. Yeah, so do you have any background on that one?
Yeah, I've played this deck quite a bit. I haven't played the combo version yet, but it can do some big stuff. Like it's kind of the version of Tron for Arena without the Tron lands.
Yeah.
You basically, instead of spending your first couple turns trying to collect three of the Tron lands, you're spending it trying to ramp into Forsaken Monument so that all of your lands are basically Tron lands.
Yeah.
And once you get Forsaken Monument out, you know, the deck is definitely beatable. But you just have no trouble casting Ugins and Ulamogs, and right. And gaining some life when you do so. So it's definitely a fun deck to play, I think, because you know you get to do these crazy things where it's like turn four and you've cast an Ugin, deal with it, opponent.
Right.
And I'm also doubling my mana or whatever, all those kinds of crazy things. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably more powerful as a combo deck, but I have a little less experience with that version. But it can do some crazy stuff. Obviously, it's got a sideboard just filled with stuff for Karn, which is pretty busted. Yeah, it's definitely a good deck. I don't know if it's necessarily like the top tier, but it's very powerful.
No, it looks like Uro is taking care of business up there. Continues to, yeah. All right, man. Well, I think that we'll close out on that. But it's nice talking historic. I think that format is really pretty, is really something special, and I think it is really well balanced, to be honest with you. It's not very often that we have something that has this much change going on in it, yet it like isn't like constantly being broken by new cards being introduced. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think there's certainly room for improvement. There's certain strategies that I think are just not super fun. Like I honestly think historic is more fun when the games go, you know, maybe one or two turns longer than like Neoform. It just really, when you're playing like this, you know, let's just look at this colorless monument deck, right?
Yeah.
That deck is the kind of cool thing about that deck is you're casting these like really big things and you're doing them like three or four turns earlier than you should. And it doesn't matter because your opponent just kills you on turn three with their Neoform combo. And the monument deck is only maybe a turn or two faster or slower than that. But it's still, I think that if they can get rid of a couple of those really, really quick winning decks, I think that they'll open up a ton of stuff. Cause we've talked about a lot of variety, but there are so many other interesting cards that are just not seeing much play, you know, like I think we're just like a little bit out from cards like Winding Constrictor being really great.
Yeah.
Renegade Rallier. There's cards like Disallow where they're going to find places to do their thing, but they're not going to necessarily enable whole strategies that they could, because they might just be a couple turns too slow. But overall, ton of variety in historic, a lot of fun stuff you can do in that format for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a format that pretty much is devoid of counter magic right now. Like, people play control decks, but you can pretty much just resolve your spells. You don't have to really ask questions because there isn't a whole lot of that being done. So if there's a counter spell introduced to the format, that could really kind of be the combo police for a lot of those decks like Neoform and the Forsaken Monument deck. You know, a counter spell that's reasonably costed. Absorb just doesn't quite do it. Sensor is too bad. So,
yeah, I think I think the best counter spells are kind of in the mono blue decks right now, or the blue white, like the flyers,
yeah,
getting
spell pierce and stuff.
Yeah, getting spell pierce and what's the flying one?
Counter it. Yeah,
it's four spike if you don't have a creature with flying. If you have a creature with flying, it costs four.
Yes, that is a very good one, and I can't think of the name of that one, but yeah. I do play it a lot. That is a good deck that doesn't appear on this list that I'm looking at right here.
Yeah, that's a good ladder grinder.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely don't want to play blue, green, black ramp on the ladder because, oh my god, the games take forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
it is a good deck, though.
It is a great deck. I will not deny that, but I have to, like, I have to get done with it at some point. You know, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I'm not about to just, like, play 5 hours of Uro and complete, like, four games in the process. So... Yeah, I don't know.
You got dailies to complete.
Yeah, man, I got chores. I got game chores.
I've got in-game chores in addition to my real-life chores. I don't need to be casting Yorion.
Yep.
I'm going to go play Yorion next, though.
All right, you go enjoy Yorion. That's another long one, but have fun. All for you.
Thank you.
All right, well, thanks for coming on, John, and thank you guys for listening. Goodbye.
Modern Metacall is a production of CardKnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with CardKnockLife offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading CardKnockLife content.